Page 102 of The Unfolding is the story of Tasha Layton.
I was really searching. I went to mosque. I went to synagogue. I went to Buddhist meditation camp. I did everything that I could possibly do to seek out what was true, because I still believed in God. I just wanted to know which path to him was right.
God's story has been unfolding
since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hey, this is Meredith Foster. For many, the journey to faith is like a winding road. It covers hills and valleys, maybe a few U-turns along the way. From the time she was a little girl, Tasha Layton had a strong faith and even felt a clear call from God. She first began using her musical gifts leading worship, but after experiencing pain and dysfunction, she left church, set aside her worship gifts, and set out on a long and lonely search for truth.
You know, I grew up in a Christian home. My parents loved Jesus. They took us to church every week. What I remembered about religion, though, was sort of frilly, itchy socks and a hard pew and being told to be quiet. And I think it wasn't until we changed churches, maybe around 8 or 9 years old, that I walked into the church and I felt alive for the first time. I love describing that experience because it was like, I finally found where I belonged. I mean, I finally found where I belonged, and it just seemed like, you know, growing up without a lot of money, I was feeling less than or not good enough and all the lies the enemy put in my head when I was little. And then when I got to this church, it was like all of that shifted in some ways. And so I became really passionate about God and learning about God. I read scripture incessantly, especially for that age. I think it was really unusual. I went to Bible studies. I joined the youth worship team. I went on mission trips. I just did everything I could do to learn about God and to sort of lean into what he was showing me and who he was creating me to be. And so I think that's what made it hurt all the more when I experienced a church wound, because I was really wounded by a leader in our church who I really wanted her approval, and I really cared about her opinion of me. I was about dating age then, started dating her son, who was the pastor's son, and he was a great guy, still is, wonderful person, but his mom had dealt with some mental illness and had a really traumatic and abusive past that she was still wounded from. And so I didn't know that. And so going into that relationship, I didn't realize that I was sort of the one that she was focusing her negative energy on. And so I was, you know, really wrecked by some things that she had told people about me that weren't true. And I'll spare you the details of that. It was so bad that, you know, the church split. I left the church. My family left the church. You know, my family still doesn't go to church to this day. And I think it was so traumatic, and I didn't really have the tools to deal with it. I was a really good girl, like kind of the no rule breaker person, so to speak. I kind of had it in me from a young age to prove to everyone that I was good, even from an unhealthy place, if that makes sense. And I might speak on that more later, but my motivation was good and bad in proving to everyone that I was good, but it made me a perfectionist and a rule follower. So all that to say, I ended up walking away from the church because I was very depressed. I was disillusioned by everything that had happened. I did not have the tools as a teenager to deal with that sort of experience and pain. And so at that point I was in college and had changed my major to music to religion because I was really searching. I wasn't quite sure that Jesus was the one for me. I didn't know that he was the path that was completely true. And so I went to mosque, I went to synagogue, I went to Buddhist meditation camp, I studied mysticism in Europe for 2 summers. I did everything that I could possibly do to seek out what was true. Cause I thought, you know what, if all truth is God's truth, cause I still believed in God. I just wanted to know which path to him was right. And I think, you know, all of my searching coupled with just some humanistic philosophy I was getting in college at a private liberal arts school. And then also being separated from my family and church, I just became very isolated and very depressed. And I could not lift myself up out of that place, no matter what I did. And I think I was shamed by it. I mean, I felt a lot of shame by that because I thought, you know, I should be stronger than this. My faith should be stronger than this to carry me. I should know better. I know what the word of God says for me, but why can't I feel it? I know it in my head, but I don't feel it in my heart. And so I followed down that path of searching and seeking and isolation for a long time. And it led to a suicide attempt. And at that lowest of low, I realized in all these other religions, you're having to strive to reach God. You're trying to be good enough. And even in the religion of Christianity, the religious side of what we experience in Christianity, it is about doing good things and being good enough. And I just, I realized that in Christianity, as far as the gospel is concerned, that Jesus is in pursuit of us, that it's different than us trying to reach God and be good enough. It's like Emmanuel, God with us, he came down to our level. And something about that triggered me intellectually. And I thought, you know what? Faith is probably a little bit like love. Sometimes you feel it, sometimes you don't, but it's a decision at some points. And so I thought, I'm just going to go back to church because Jesus and faith in the form of Jesus, no other God, was the only thing or person that offered any sort of real transformative power or peace in my life. And so I went back to a church where no one knew me for like a year, and I still didn't feel anything. I was very numb. But at the end of the service one day, the pastor said, if you want a touch from God, why don't you come up at the end and we want to pray for you? And I was the first one there and the last one to leave. And I was just a sobbing mess on the ground, and God met me there. And I remembered my calling from when I was 13. I felt something for the first time in a couple of years. And whereas I was very wounded by people, by the church, I was also healed and loved on by the church. And God used the very thing that wounded me to heal me. And it's a beautiful thing to think about. And I ended up going to seminary.
You mentioned that you went back to your calling from when you were 13. Did you experience something from God at 13?
When I was 13, our youth group went down to a youth conference in Florida, and Jenny Mayo was speaking. She's a youth pastor that speaks all over the nation and I think the world. And she had sort of made an invitation at the end of her message for those who felt called to ministry. And so when she made that invitation, they were singing that song, "We Will Abandon It All." Wow. "For the Sake of the Call." I will never forget that. Oh my gosh. Every time I hear that Stephen Curtis Chapman song, I cry. Cause I just remember that moment. I just ran to the altar and I said, God, I don't know what I'm called to do specifically, but I know that I'm called to do what she's doing right now, because I don't see her, I see God. And I want to do whatever I can do where people don't see me, they end up seeing you at the end of the night.
Tasha had no idea what the specifics were. She just knew she felt called to help set people free. She was a gifted worship leader, and God was about to open doors in music, but not at all what Tasha had imagined. Part two of her story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib. As a younger person, I would have never imagined that I was tough enough to handle the challenges that life threw at me. But I was wrong. By the grace of God, I managed through all of it. That taught me a lesson that we are stronger than we think and able to handle more than we think. Brianna Weiss said, "One day, the mountain that's in front of you will be so far behind you, it will barely be visible in the distance. But the person you have become in learning to get over it, that will stay with you forever. And that's the point of the mountain. 2 Timothy 1 says that God gives us a spirit of power. And looking back at my life, me, a timid teenager who was afraid of his own tail, I can testify that that verse is true. You never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice you have. Just then, God gives you the spirit of power to be resilient and to get through the difficult times. My prayer for you is that you believe it too. Read more at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Tasha Layton's story.
So when I decided to go to seminary, I moved to California, didn't know anyone out there. I just came with one suitcase. I didn't have a way to from the airport to where I was staying. I just literally came on faith, didn't have a car or furniture or anything. And God provided all of that within weeks of me being out there. But all throughout seminary, I was so thankful for what God was doing in my life. It was important what I was learning, but it was more important what he was doing in me and how he was changing me during that time. And I just had such a heart for people. I really didn't know what I was going to do. I just wanted to be in ministry and help people. And so I was a worship pastor at a church out there for a couple of years and ended up doing American Idol because some people had told me, you know, why don't you come with us to do it? And I said, oh my gosh, I would never do a show like that. I would never do anything like that. But I ended up, lo and behold, at the Rose Bowl with 14,000 people, and they're only choosing 200. And I was like, y'all are crazy. None of you guys are going to make it. And so, including me, you know, we're not going to make it. We are silly doing this. And so ended up, I did make it, and I made it all the way through Hollywood Week. And at the end of that week, I just had this sense. I was like, God, I have never considered doing anything outside of the church with my life, but I think that might be coming. And so I wasn't sure what to do with that because I think I had these ideas again of what things are supposed to look like or whatever when you're called to ministry. And I just didn't think that that included singing secular music. I hate that word secular and, you know, but singing music outside of the realm of Jesus music. And I ended up going to my pastor and telling him, I said, I think I might be supposed to do some music outside of the church. And he said, oh, we've known that for years, Tasha. We're glad you're finally figuring it out. You have a mission on your life. And I just laughed. And so within weeks of that conversation, I got a call for the Kesha Rihanna tour. And I thought, okay, number one, how did you guys get my name? Mm. And then I went and got the job, and then the Lord told me not to take it. And I didn't fully understand that. But I woke up that morning just kind of sensing you're not supposed to do this. And so I called him and told him. And then that same day, the same time I was supposed to be starting rehearsal for the Kesha Rihanna tour, I got a call from Katy Perry's manager. Can you be here in 20 minutes? And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Who gets calls like this twice in 1 week? And when I'm like a no name, nobody knows me, you know, I'm out in a little church in the valley. No one's paying attention to what I'm doing. I was just so surprised at the door that God was clearly opening. And so I toured with her for 4 years, and that was a wild ride. And at the end of that season, I just knew that it was time to go back to leading worship. I missed singing songs that directly connected people to God. And I think I was just ready to be doing that again.
During that time, I just want to probe a little bit like about your faith. So once you got into seminary, that was a time of lots of growth and God doing things in you. And then as you went out on tour, because I think the assumption for a lot of people would be, oh, that would be really hard spiritually for you. I'm curious whether it was or not.
Yeah. When I went out on tour, you know, it was after seminary and I knew who I was. I think if I had gone on tour when I was younger, it would have wrecked me because of the access, the environment, the experiences out there. Mm-hmm. But it was really a wonderful experience. And I knew who I was. I knew my mission. I knew why I was there. That didn't mean that it wasn't hard at times. I think 1 year we were only in the U.S. for 3 weeks out of the year. And it can be very lonely when you're in so many time zones and countries. You lose touch with people because they stop inviting you to birthday parties and they stop giving you a call because they know you're international that week, or they just sort of assume that you're not home. So it could be, you know, it was very difficult in some ways, but in other ways I felt, you know, right in the middle of what I was supposed to be doing. I think ultimately, I mean, I still sort of lean on that faith that was built during that time now in my life.
As you were coming to the end of that 4 years, you just felt that sort of nudge or longing to be back in worship. So you kind of knew that that was going to come to an end or that your life was going to change?
Yeah, I think, you know, by the end of touring with Katie, something happened. I went to Kenya for the first time. I'd always wanted to go to Africa. I knew that God had called me to Africa in some sense. And so when I left Kenya, actually went to South Africa after that, I forgot. And then I was going to meet up with a tour in Malaysia. And when I landed in Malaysia, you know, I had just been with the Maasai tribe in the bush. I had just been helping this pastor get a church plant started in Cape Town. And it was just like all this really fruitful time, you know, ministering. And it was like when I landed in Malaysia, the tour wanted to go shopping at the Mall of Malaysia. And it was just like that juxtaposition being in a third world country and then heading to a mall. I just knew that it was time. Mm-hmm. I knew that, okay, I can't do this forever. The grace has lifted, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was time. And so sure enough, it wasn't too long after that that I took a sabbatical and moved to Nashville.
And when you made that move to Nashville, did you have concrete plans or was it kind of like going to seminary, headed out and didn't quite know how it was going to fall into place?
Yes and no, because I took a sabbatical because I had sort of a mini meltdown. I was in a relationship that I ended. I didn't feel like I was called to my church anymore. I had quit Katie. Some of my friends in LA were moving away. It was like all of these things sort of coalesced at once. And I found myself feeling very stuck in life. And so I wasn't sure what to do. And after a few weeks of trying to deal with it on my own, I realized like, I'm not okay. I need help processing this. And then I took a sabbatical and I went to counseling. And it was there that I experienced the most amazing time of inner healing. And I didn't realize that, you know, from the time I was little into my adult life, the enemy had been using lies from childhood to influence my thought and my decisions. Those lies of not feeling good enough and I'm not worth getting to know, or I can't let anyone see the real me, or I have to be good enough to not be rejected. All of those lies, I think I needed to get to the bottom of that because it was coming out sideways in my life in ways that I didn't realize. And so when I did, my counselor, you know, he said, because God stands outside of time, he was there when, you know, traumatic things or hurtful things happen to us in our lives, but he's still there because he stands outside of time. And so why don't you ask the Holy Spirit to take a hold of your imagination and take you back to that place, tell him how you feel and ask him where he is in the room. And what does he want to say to you? And I think I spent 2 weeks in Colorado going through every single thing that had ever happened to me that hurt in any form. Like, even if I felt like it was insignificant, I wrote it down. I went through every single thing to dig up the lies of the enemy in my life. And I got to the root of every one of them. And I felt the truth move from my head to my heart at that point. And I felt a freedom that I'd never experienced as God, one by one, took those lies and replaced them with his truth. And after experiencing that, I thought, oh, I have the courage to do anything that I want to do because God loves me. He thinks I'm wonderful. I'm his masterpiece, Ephesians says. And it's like, that's when I decided to move to Nashville because I don't compare myself to anyone. I don't feel the need to compete with anyone. I'm just doing what I hear God telling me to do. And it was so freeing and wonderful. And I think there's so many of those lies in my life that I don't deal with that at all now. It's like true transformation. That's what the gospel does. I mean, that is the truth of the gospel and the truth of who Jesus is. And when he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and that whom the Son sets free is free indeed, it really is real freedom when it comes straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I experienced in life. So when I got to Nashville, I didn't really know what was going to happen. I just knew I wanted to write books. I wanted to speak to people. I liked music. I didn't know what was going to happen. And so within a year of being here, I think I ended up, you know, getting a record deal and doing music. And I don't think I fully anticipated that, but it makes sense. I think I probably had a heart to do it because I felt like that was what was in my hand that I could use to fulfill what God had put in my heart. But, you know, I started out as a music major in college and I'm a music school dropout because theory was really hard. And I was already going through a really hard time in life. And so to couple, you know, hard classes for me, because mm-hmm. I didn't grow up doing, you know, music, like I didn't grow up with lessons or learning music. And so even though that was my passion, I was at a music school and it was just really hard. And mm-hmm. so that coupled with what I was going through at the time, I did quit and I changed my major. And so I think I always had sort of that cloud over my head too, like, oh man, I can't do music because I'm a music school dropout.
Well, especially in Nashville, you could, if you hadn't had that experience in Colorado, you could have fallen into comparison and that kind of stuff, you know, but.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But
even
God.
When you are strong, even when you do know who you are, it's so easy to set yourself against those around you when they're so talented. It's mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. God, why do you need me? No, that's the wrong thing to think. God needs every single one of us. And there's room for everyone. There's just, I think it, you know, it's easy to get sucked into the game of like thinking less of one person to build yourself up or whatever. And it's just not the way the kingdom works. It's the kingdom of opposites where there's room for every single one.
Can you tell me about how you met your husband? And is that tied into your faith journey in any way?
Yeah, I think for a long time, you know, I didn't get married until I was 32. And for a long time, I thought, you know, God, all I want in life is to be in ministry with my husband. And you know, going back home, it's like everyone in my zip code's married. I've stopped getting wedding invitations. Now I'm getting baby shower invitations. And it was really hard. And I think that was the source of a broken heart for me. And looking back on it, I see, man, God, you really knew that I needed to travel the world. You knew that I needed to cross everything off my bucket list. You knew what needed to happen in my heart in Colorado, even so I would be a better mom. And so looking back on it, it makes perfect sense, the timing of getting married. But I think while I was in it, I thought, did I do something to deserve this, God? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. are you holding out on me? Are you holding your best out on me? Or are you punishing me for decisions I've made? Am I just that evil? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. just all the wrong things we think in our heads mm-hmm. theologically. And when I got married at 32, you know, no one told me that being single is hard, but being married is a lot harder. And it's like, especially after you have kids, it only gets harder in some ways, mm-hmm. but it gets richer. And so I do see that as a part of my faith journey. And there hasn't been anything that's exposed my selfishness or even just my overabundance of discretionary time before I got mm-hmm. married and had kids. It's like nothing exposes that, like having kids.
Mm-hmm. So what happened in terms of you begin this now moving into a career, you've got a record deal. What was that experience like for you? Was that a time of flourishing in your faith or did you find more challenges in your faith?
I think I was really encouraged in my faith, but not, it didn't have anything to do with music per se. I think it was more what we were experiencing in our personal lives. I know my husband had known for 10 years before we got married that he couldn't have kids. And I had known the doctors had told me that it would be very difficult for me as well. And so I think we saw a lot of miracles surrounding that. And we believed God for a baby. And we were in Uganda leading worship. And I was leading a song called Miracles. And I look over at my husband on the ground crying. And I knew that something was going on. He said, I think God just healed my back, which is what doctors had told us probably caused his infertility. And he said, I'm warm all over and I can't get it to hurt. And so they prayed for us that night that we'd be able to have a baby. And we were pregnant with Levi 2 months later.
Whoa.
And So we have two. Then we couldn't stop having them. But it was just a beautiful thing. I think our personal lives were flourishing with faith and miracles. And so I think after my time in Colorado, my faith has never been the same. You know, Jesus and I have a lot of history over the years, but there's something special, just that special gift he gave to me in Colorado that I lean on so heavily. And my life's never been the same since.
Now, not only do you have a record deal, but, you know, you've got songs on the radio and you have all of the things that somebody who might be pursuing a music career is experiencing, you know, fans and following and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just curious, you know, what if that's been challenging for your faith, or again, if that Colorado experience has kind of prepared you not to be too impressed by that kind of stuff. I'm just curious what that's been like.
Well, honestly, Meredith, I think that my experience with Katy Perry has been the most influential piece when considering where I am now and what I'm doing and any sort of influence God is giving me, because I've seen such the dark side of fame. And when people know who you are, it really, I mean, even psychologically, it's proven that fame changes our brains. And so I think, you know, seeing the fact that Katy couldn't live a normal life and the pressure that gets put on someone, I think I definitely needed that experience before walking into what I'm doing now. And then also my experience in Colorado, my motivations are so strong to see people set free that it really is all I think about. Like I was just having lunch with someone today and I thought, that is all I care about on earth. Like I could do music or not, but if I don't see people set free the way that I was set free, I feel like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, and so I really do think you have to also feel called to it. I mean, I feel called to do what I'm doing. And so I think there's a grace and a support from God, and he surrounds us with strength and shoulders us with just these pillars of strength. And I have amazing people in my life who always call me towards truth. And so, and a great therapist, you know, like I think you need all those pieces.
I'm just reflecting back to that experience back when you were in high school that was so hurtful in church. I know there are people listening to this who've been hurt and maybe have been out of church for a while, maybe been out for a long time. You know, that's a place of woundedness. Do you have any sort of words of wisdom that you would share?
I think don't judge yourself for where you are. It was very easy for me in my questioning to feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't be questioning, or is this bad that I'm questioning, or is it bad that I feel bitter or hurt or all these things? And I think, you know, just don't judge yourself for that, because it's just part of the human experience. And I would say to those people who are in the church, don't judge the person who is searching, because you don't know their life either. You don't know their pain and the journey that God has them on. And so I think we have a tendency for those of us inside and outside the church, so to speak, to judge one another. And I think that's a really dangerous place to be in, because God alone is judge. And we tend to try to be the lawyer, the jury, and the judge and all the pieces. We just have opinions. And I think we just need to have less than an opinion. But also just trusting that God's not intimidated by your questions. And if you keep seeking him, he will keep drawing near to you. And he was drawing near to you before you even started questioning. And he knows. And don't be scared. Don't be scared of where you are. Lean into him. Tell him how you're feeling. And he will show up. Test him. There aren't many times in scripture when God says to test him, but it's in there. And I think he's strong enough and big enough to handle all that you're going through.
Tasha says she does feel called to music, but even more, she feels called to see people set free in the same way she experienced during her time in Colorado. So she's really excited about a new resource she's written. It's a workbook and journal that helps you explore the process of healing prayer. It's called Boundless, and it will be available soon on Amazon and on her website, TashaLayton.com. That's also where you can find her music and dates for her upcoming tour. Thanks to Tasha for sharing her story. Hey, I also want to say thanks for your kind support of our special episode of The Unfolding, marking the 20th anniversary of 9/11. It was one of our biggest weeks ever for downloads and subscribing to the podcast. It's the first time The Unfolding has appeared on Apple's top chart for religion and spirituality. That's really cool, and it helps other people find the podcast. So thank you for listening, sharing, and giving such kind reviews. We're grateful. Thanks to all the folks who helped make The Unfolding. Elena Nallen for help with social media, Danielle Perez for web stuff, Jonathan Eltravogue for editorial help, our amazing producer, Jason Rackow, and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Head to HabibHabib.com to learn more about Live to Lead, a leadership and personal growth event featuring John Maxwell. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.
Hey, I'm Keith Stevens, and I hope you'll take a listen to my brand new podcast, I Love That Song. This week, we'll go deep with Ryan Stevenson.
She said, you fight to keep your tears because there's healing and there's redemption in your tears. That's how we heal.
Inspiration for your life on the podcast, I Love That Song, wherever podcasts are heard.